This reading is called Center, and we'll do a 2-minute meditation followed by the prayer. Center, from a bud, only a promise, then a gentle opening, rich blooming, bursting fragrance, the fulfillment of the center. True beauty comes from within. Take a flower as an example. In the beginning, it is only a bud. It does not yet show its loveliness to the world. It does not attract bees or butterflies, and it cannot yet become fruit. Only when it opens is beauty revealed in its center. There is the focus of its exquisiteness. There is the source of its aroma. There is its sweet nectar. In the same way, our own unique beauty comes from within. Our glory has nothing to do with our appearance or our occupation. Our special qualities come from an inner source. We must take care to open and bloom naturally and leisurely and keep to the center. It is from there that all mystery and power come, and it is good to let it unfold in its own time. Just as a flower goes through stages, bud, open, bloom, pollinate, wither, fruit, fall, each of us will go through the obvious stages of birth to death. We aren't of a single character through our lives. We change and grow. Our identities unfold and bloom. Unless we attain the center and keep to our progressions, we cannot ever reach true independence in our lives. Meditation. Prayer. You don't like the lion and its cup?
Please lay aside everything I think I know about this weekend. The big book, alcoholism, addiction, the 12 steps, myself, and especially you, God, so I may have an open mind and a new experience. Help me to see the truth.
So I had no ability to understand what life was about before I got into the inventory process and started doing this thing. That's kind of what the reading meant to me, is that there's a beauty that exists in each one of us that we're completely blind to because we're so wrapped up in all this stuff in our head. But once we do this work that's in this book, and we start to see the reality for what it is and not what we think it is, we get to start seeing the beauty of our existence, our own existence, not somebody else's, the one that we have access to in our experience. So we covered the resentment inventory, and now we'll look at fear. Okay, I'm not going to read a bunch out of this thing, because here's the deal that I figured out. This is like in Brandon's collective experience of sobriety. What I've come to the realization of is I am so afraid of life in general. Okay? Now, when I showed up, I did not believe that I was real afraid of anything. I was a big, tough guy. I'd been through a lot of stuff. Can't touch me. First inventory, you know, had like snakes and, you know, stuff like that in it. But like, the longer I'm here, the more that I realize that fear is the firing mechanism for all of my really screwed up interactions with the world, okay? Fear and pride. But when I really look at pride, pride is just fear of how you're going to view me. So it's really all fear, okay? And there's a lot of different ways to look at the fear inventory. One of the best and easiest and most efficient ways to look at it is just, what is the fear? At the bottom of page 67, it's, but did we ourselves not set the ball rolling? So how did I set the ball rolling? On page 68, it says we ask ourselves why we had the fear. Okay, so what did I do to set the ball rolling? Why do I have a fear? And then in that second paragraph on page 68, it says perhaps there is a better way. So what's a better way? Okay. And that's the way that I look at like a fear of that you guys are, let's say, the fear is that you guys aren't going to like what I have to say. Well, how did I set the ball rolling? Well, I was arrogant and tried to be combative, okay? Why do I have the fear? Well, I have the fear because I'm really worried about what you guys think about me, because I'm very self-centered and I'm not confident in my ability to present this information well. So what's a better way? Pray to God and say, God, can you help direct me through this and tell them what they need to hear? Boom. That was one piece of fear inventory. Real quick, like. Then there's this great sentence at the end of the third full paragraph, the fear prayer. I wish more people would talk about the fear prayer. To me, it is the best prayer I've ever been exposed to, ever. We asked him to remove our fear. Who, God? Yeah, so that's a prayer. We ask, God, please remove my fear and direct my attention to what you'd have me be. Let's say I've got a fear of financial insecurity. Let's say I don't have a job right now. And I say, God, please remove my fear of not having a job. Direct my attention to what you'd have me be. All of a sudden, three names pop in my head of people to call about a job. It works that fast. Mm-hmm. Question.
What page did you say that was on?
It's on page 68. It's the 1, 2, 3, third full paragraph. It's the second from last sentence of that third full paragraph. Okay? So I ask God to remove my fear of whatever it is, direct my attention to what you'd have me be. I get a response almost instantaneously. Sometimes I start doing something, right? Sometimes, like, maybe I'm looking for a job. God, please remove my fear of finding a job. Direct my attention to what you'd have me be. That night I'm at home, I'm brushing up on my resume. I didn't do that. It was a result of the prayer. Okay? Literally, you will get instantaneous response out of this prayer almost always. And then when it happens, you'll question why. No, that wasn't really the answer to a prayer. Believe what you want. I believe what I want. And I believe it's instantaneous. So we can cover fear a lot longer and get a lot more in depth, but that's what I'm going to say right now, okay? Now about sex. This is, many of us need an overhauling there, okay? The sex inventory can also be called a conduct inventory. I like to call it a conduct inventory because I don't know about you, when I say sex, I think about sex. But if I look at it from a conduct perspective, I'm going to include a whole lot of other people that maybe I wouldn't have included otherwise. And so in my case, I look at this, in the first several inventories, I looked at this as my conduct towards the opposite sex, because I happen to be interested in women, and for me, that's where I really needed to explore. Okay? So I looked at my conduct in these relationships. It didn't just necessarily mean pokey-pokey. Sometimes it meant, like, women that I was thinking about in my head of having sex with. They didn't know it, but I was doing it, right? Anybody do that?
Yeah.
Okay. And how I would... So then there's nine questions here, right? We reviewed our conduct. Where had we been selfish? There's one. Dishonest, two. Inconsiderate, three. Whom had we hurt? Okay. That's the fourth one, and it's never the short list that we think it is. Okay. Whom had we hurt? Well, let's see. I cheated on my wife. I hurt my wife.
Let me read it. I got it one handy.
What's that?
Let me read one.
Yeah, Tarek's going to read one.
Let's see here. Yeah. Okay, this is, hold on. Maybe I don't want to read this. No.
Yeah, you don't want to read it.
No.
Okay. So whom had I hurt? Okay, so that one could be, so let's say I had some infidelity with my wife. Who did I hurt? I say I hurt her. Okay, well, we're always so short-sighted in this question. Who did I really hurt? Well, I hurt her. I hurt my kids. I hurt her parents. I hurt my parents. I hurt my brothers and sisters. I hurt her brother. I hurt everybody she works with. But, like, whom did we hurt? Like, this, if the answer to this question lets you start to see the ripple effect of your actions in the world. Okay? It's never just the short-sighted people that you think it is. Like, this question could really be, who did we hurt? Everybody on the planet. Because that's really how my actions show up. Because that's where they go. All right, so the fifth question, did I unjustifiably arouse jealousy? Suspicion, there's six. Bitterness, seven. Where was I at fault? Eight. What should I have done instead? Nine. Okay? And through this, what should I have done instead? Usually, the correct thing to do is the exact opposite of what I did. Okay? And out of that, if I've gone through my inventory properly and I list out all those what should I have done insteads, and I put those together, then we've got this cool little paragraph called the sane sounds ideal for my future sex life. So let's say I was unfaithful. What should I have done instead? Be faithful. Let's say that I lied. What should I do instead? Be honest. So we create this ideal for our future sex life, right? For our future relationship life, for how our conduct should be going forward. And then we ask God to mold our ideals and help us live up to them. Okay, so what I challenge any of you that are in this room that are in a relationship to do is to write a sane, sound ideal for your future relationship life. And to, on a routine basis, read it to your significant other. And then ask them to grade you. It sounds scary, it's not. But you will find that if you actually live in a spiritual life, more of the items you're doing better than you thought.
I mean, there's no guarantee your marriage will not fall apart, though, if you're still doing that exercise.
But as you go through that process, you get to learn how... It's kind of like a scorecard that you kind of get a check in with the person that you're in a relationship with, likely the most important relationship outside that relationship with God. And you get to find how you're showing up on that one, okay?
Yeah, can I interject?
Yep.
You know, because I used to do this with Marcy, and I kept struggling in the same areas, and eventually, you know, it didn't have an impact anymore, you know, because she would continuously give me my report card, and it was the same areas I was falling short in, and, you know, we got to a point where we had irreconcilable differences. And I think we're going to be friends at the end of the day. But this is a wonderful practice. I don't regret having done it at all. But if the behavior doesn't change, it's almost a magnifying glass, so to speak. So
is it better to be ignorant of your problems or know about them? I think it's better to know about them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how would this apply, what you suggested, if you're not currently in a relationship? How would
write an ideal of what you think a relationship should look like in the future.
And then strive to have
it. Well, and then you create vision and intent to have that show up. The question that I ask a lot of the guys that I sponsor that are not in relationships is, if these are all the ways that you know, this is how you want to show up in a relationship, what are the things that you want that significant other to have, okay? And then they write out their list, and then I ask them, are you the type of man that's going to attract that person to you?
Ooh.
Nice.
You know, let's say I'm 60 pounds overweight, and I want this real hard body hot mama, right?
Yeah.
Is a hard body hot mama going to want a guy that's 60 pounds overweight? Well, maybe if he's got some magic skills, but, you know, I mean, chances are not, right? If I want to attract a hot mama, I need to get myself in shape to look pretty hot, right? Okay. If I want this person that's going to be loving and tolerant and accepting of me, I have to become loving and tolerant and accepting of other people. It's kind of weird how that works.
Yeah, that I can wrap my mind around. Yeah.
So when I take a guy, Tarek's going to talk about the fifth step, but when I have a guy go through inventory and we get to the fifth step, I have him write an ideal for their relationship. I have them write an ideal for what recovery is going to look like. I have them write an ideal for what their work life is going to look like. And if they're a dad, I'm going to probably have them write an ideal for what a dad looks like. And then there's this cool little paragraph on page 70 that I love. That's in the sex. It's in the sex inventory. But to me, I think you can apply this to any area of your life. It's the first full paragraph on page 70. Suppose we fall short of our chosen ideal and stumble. Does this mean that we are going to get drunk? Some people tell us so, but it is only a half-truth. It depends on us and our motives. If we are sorry for what we have done and have an honest desire to let God take us to better things, we believe we will be forgiven and we will have learned our lesson. If we are not sorry and our conduct continues to harm others, we are quite sure to drink. We are not theorizing. These are facts out of our experience. So let's say that I, in every way possible, treat women poorly. I write an ideal that I don't want to treat women this way, and I continue to do it, and I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
It is my experience that the spiritual realm all folds into itself. And that if I think that I'm going to skate away from setting an ideal and falling short, and that I'm going to come out unscathed, And I've watched people go out behind things like this. When you continue to do the thing that you know is wrong, and you make no effort whatsoever to change, at some point in time, that guilt and shame and remorse is going to just take you down. And I've seen it happen. You had a question?
Yeah, I don't quite get what y'all meant by, right, what an ideal relationship looks like, and read it to them and have them grade it, like grade
okay.
My opinion of it or grade my performance?
Your performance.
Performance.
So I'll give you some examples that have been on mine in the past.
Okay.
Have a deeper relationship with her kids.
Yeah.
Try to get engaged with her kids. Try to ask her about her day. Try to watch the shows that she wants to watch. Okay?
Okay.
And so when I set those as my ideal, And then let's say that I do nothing to cultivate a relationship with her kids. She's going to give me an F.
So you mean the ideal performance for you in the relationship?
Correct. I don't.
I have one up.
Goals for you to attain.
Yeah, here's my ideal with Marcy from 2 years ago. Okay, it's right up here on the board. I said, what should I have done instead? I listen to Marcy with intent, and I communicate without fear. My actions show her she's appreciated. I continue to value her ideas and thoughts. We deepen our relationships as intimate lovers and best friends. We set aside one night per month for a special evening together. I pull my weight around the house. I thank God for her and Callie every day. I invite her to let me know when I'm not meeting her needs in any of these areas. So I would sit down, pull this out, and I would read it to her, and sentence by sentence, I'm like, well, how am I doing? Do I listen with intent? And she'll tell me, and you do a shitty job of listening, right? Or she does, you're doing okay with that one. And I would do this. I try to do it once a quarter, once every 3 months. And we did it for years. I mean, we had a really good marriage. We just had some differences, different interests in life, you know? Her life was surrounded around drinking. And my life is not surrounded. It's based on helping people recover from their alcoholism. So we became like this. And then I unconsciously checked out. Our marriage became somewhat of a business arrangement. And I wasn't letting her be her free spirit. And I was putting conditions on how I wanted her to show up. And she was putting conditions on how she wanted me to show up. And just one day we decided to go our separate ways. You know, no animosity. But... you know, I had an ideal I wanted to grow towards. I just would fall short. You know, most of us, like the book says, fall short of our chosen ideals. But I've watched way too many people write up ideals that don't even refer to them. They don't even refer to them. You do the exercise, you put your inventory in the folder, you put it in your trunk of your car, and that's it.
Check.
Pretty much that is what that is a guideline for you to better yourself.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Okay.
Oh. Okay, we're on step five now?
We are.
Page 72. I don't write the fourth step to find out who and what I am. If anything, I write a fourth step to find out who and what I'm not. I write inventory to find out the things that are blocking me from myself, from a deeper experience of how I'm existing, from a deeper experience with God. And they block me from you guys. And so through the inventory process, I will face and be rid of those things that have been blocking me. But in order to do that, I have to do a fifth step. A solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. So having made my personal inventory, what am I going to do about it? This is the intent behind the fifth step. I would like a new attitude and a new relationship with my Creator. That's the entire intent. And every time I do a fifth step, I've been clean almost 10 years. And... in those 10 years, I've probably had 25 fifth steps. I do multiple fifth steps. The next page says we considered carefully before we decided the person or persons that were going to listen to our fifth steps. So if you guys go to your sponsor tomorrow and say this guy with red hair was at this workshop and he told us we could do a fifth step with more than one person, and your sponsor's like, no, you only do them with me, and you want to prove him wrong, you take him to page 74, and it says, rightly and naturally, we think well before we choose the person or persons with whom we take this intimate and confidential step.
That's not what they mean, Terry.
Oh, but you think they mean something else?
Maybe that's what they mean.
I think that's what they mean. So, with all that being said, here's the rule. Whoever listens to your fifth step, it's got to be a closed mouth friend. Yeah. Because we were talking about some deep, dark areas of our lives that need to have light shed into them. They need to be, you know, the book says we need to illuminate every twist that we can, every dark cranny of the past. So I feel as if my life over the past maybe 3 years has become one unfolding fist step. It seems like I fist step with this guy almost every day. And then I have a few other men, and it's interesting. The more fifth steps I've done and the more transparency and accountability I have in my life, the more open I feel like my life is. It's not constricted. It's expansive. I don't know if that's the right descriptive words to use, but the more people that really know who you are based on a fifth step, it's one less person we have to be, parts of our life have to be hidden from. that really know who we are. So I encourage you to do multiple fifth steps. So more than most people, addicts like me lead a double life at times. We're very much like actors. To the outer world, we present our stage character, the one we want everybody to see. We want to enjoy a certain reputation, but sometimes deep down inside, we don't feel like we deserve it. And so if we are to live long and happily in this world, we must be honest, transparent, and authentic with a group of people, in my opinion. And the more people you do it with, the more you can do it in an open setting like this. I've shared some really intimate things with you guys this weekend, and I just don't have any attachment to them. So be it. Those experiences happened in my life. Those experiences were given to me by the power. And I'm supposed to have a perspective on those experiences showing up in my life. And part of that is having a fifth step and doing them on a regular basis as I go through the work. But the rule is that I am hard on myself and I'm always considerate of others. And so as I go to this, where I'm given a set of clear-cut instructions. I pocket my pride and I go to it. Shine every twist of character. Shine light every dark cranny of the past. So when I listen to a fifth step, guys, there's a series of questions I ask, especially with new people. Right off the rip, I'm not gonna hold any punches. Here we go. Have you had a homosexual experience? Have you been involved in rape? Have you been involved in murder? Have you been involved in bestiality? Have you been involved in armed burglary, covering up a murder, or a murder? I'm gonna go off and answer all of those. Because those are the darkest crannies. And sometimes they don't always show up in resentment inventory. So those are the questions I ask.
And those sound really kind of like strange questions, but most of those show up in a lot of different inventories. So if you think that sounds kind of weird, wait till you start hearing some fist ups, guys. They're not that much different. They're really not. People try to hold stuff back, and you're like, dude, you know what's in there? Just tell me anyways. I don't care. Once I leave this fifth step, it's gone anyways.
Okay. Once we've taken this step, withholding nothing, we are delighted because we can look the world in the eye.
Here's another promise, guys.
When you completed your first fifth step or any recent fifth steps, did you feel like you could look people in the eye more so than you could before you did that fifth step? Were you able to sit alone in perfect peace and ease?
Yes.
Did your fears fall from you?
Yes.
Did you begin to feel the nearness of your Creator?
Yes.
You may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now you have begun to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the drug or the drink problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the Spirit of the universe. So, you know, my mental obsession was removed before I ever worked a step. It was a powerful surrender experience that I describe as being split wide open, where the voice of the liar was completely put into remission. Remember back on page 23, it says the problem centers in the mind. The voice of the liar, this is how it's active in somebody in this room right now that's saying, I don't have to do what these guys do. That's one way that the voice lies to you. The other way the voice lies to you is, you know what, I've been here 90 days in this program. I made a commitment to do 6 months, but I'm good now. I don't need to do 6 months. I think I'm ready to go. The other way it lies to you is, you know, meeting with my sponsor is really important, man, but I got to get to the gym every day, and that is the most important thing in my life right now because I got to look right, I got to look ripped, and I got to talk to women. That's going to give me my sense of who I am inside. I'll do this recovery stuff, but it's not number one on my radar. This is how the voice of the liar starts to show up, right? Oh, wake up in the morning. You know, I'll pray and meditate. Tonight when I get home from work, I'm not going to do it this morning. And before you know it, it's unfolded into a few days in a row where you haven't done that. And then you're twisted sideways, and then you're on a phone doing a 10-step call, and it takes someone asking you a series of questions to see how you have just sort of deluded yourself into where you are right now. And I'm trying to throw out as many examples. I had a young man ask me, and I just remembered about the voice of the liar. The way the liar, before I ever worked at 12 Steps, would show up, is he tell me I was going to learn how to smoke crack on the weekends.
Go.
Yeah. I was going to be a recreational drug user. That I was going to think my way out of this because I am a smart guy. And I have a college degree and I have a very high IQ. And therefore, I can think my way out of this problem. Where you guys failed, I will succeed. Thank you, but no thank you. These are some more examples of how the liar shows up in our lives. Wait, wait. You know what? If I just got the right job, then I wouldn't smoke crack anymore. That's got to be the problem, right? Or maybe if I had the right amount of money, I wouldn't have to trust God anymore, and I could just smoke crack like I want to.
Like a gentleman.
So there's all kinds of examples of how this voice shows up and lies to us. You know, not being accountable in your community. You guys have a set of standards you're supposed to be living by. You know, and here's another one. When in early recovery, we still live under the notion that we are going to rat people out if we tell someone else that they're not doing what they're supposed to be doing. Have you ever thought that by sharing that information, you might be saving that person's life as opposed to snitching them out? So, those are versions of the liar and how he operates or she operates within. So, the fifth step, guys, I told you I didn't have a relationship with my father and ladies. I keep forgetting we got some ladies in here. I didn't have a relationship with my father until I was 31 years old, until I got clean. My dad's alcoholic. And on my first resentment inventory I had, it was in the teens, how many resentments I had against my father. You know, he beat me. He didn't come to any of my basketball games. He never remembered my birthday. He physically abused my mom. My brother and I both got in a fist fight with my father and beat him up when we were in high school. I mean, this was a serious list of resentments. And I'm going through there, and I'm reading my fifth step to my first sponsor, Randy. And I remember, you know, at some point we were reading about my dad. Randy started asking me a series of questions, and he said to me, "Your dad was what, 41 when he had you? Do you know anything about your dad's life experiences leading up to age 41 that made him the man that he was at 41?" Never had I asked my father what his life experiences had been. And then Randy goes, "Have you ever physically abused anyone?" I was like, "Yeah." "Have you ever verbally abused anyone?" I said, "Yeah." "Have you ever emotionally terrorized anyone?" "Yeah." "Have you forgotten your family members' birthdays?" "Yeah." "Have you missed family birthday parties?" "Yes." "Have you missed a ton of family functions?" "Well, yes." And then I got what he was trying to do. He was turning me into my father. And at some point in my fifth step, my head dropped, and I realized I'd become my father. And the other thing that hit me, and if the power of choice and being driven applies to me, that it means it applies to every single person sitting in this room. So if we become driven and we don't have much choice in where the force, whatever force is moving us, compels us to go and do, we have to be responsible to make the amends and clean it up, then the same law must apply to him. And I woke up to that, and I began to have compassion for my father. And I made amends to my father. And as part of making amends to my father and cleaning it all up, I began to get lunch with my dad on most Sundays and take him to see a movie, and we began to cultivate a relationship. Now, I told you guys the story of what happened when my father transitioned and my sixth sense giving me the gift of whispering certain things into his ear right before he left his body. That would not have been possible if it wasn't for this fifth step. Why? Because I was willing to look at things from an entirely different angle. I understood and I had compassion, and that's a real powerful thing. You know, another thing that I woke up to in a fifth step was I thought this girlfriend of mine had left me and cheated on me. But once I discovered the truth of the fifth step and was willing to look at things from an entirely different angle, I realized that I would have cheated on me. I wouldn't have stayed with me. I was possessive. I was disrespectful. I was absent a lot of the times. I wasn't a solid boyfriend, period. I drove her away. She never left. This is a change in perspective. And this is what the fifth step's all about. And, you know, I didn't go over the returning home instructions. You know, I just had a guy do a fifth step. I was like, "Hey, bud, when you get home, find me a shelf. Put your big book on the shelf and take it down." I'm big on that kind of stuff. It's in the book. Take the book down from the shelf. Let's do what the old timers did. And it has a series of questions to answer when you do your hour returning home. So, the fifth step, it's one of the most vital parts and seeing our faulty thinking with how we engage people in this world and how we operate in relationships. And without the fifth step, we wouldn't see any of that. That's why it's such a vital piece of everything. Before I turn it back over to Brandon to do 6 and 7, I made a comment earlier about it seems as if my life with the communication with members of the recovery community and other members that are on a spiritual path seems to be an ongoing fifth step, an ongoing report of what I'm struggling with, an ongoing report of things that I'm observing about myself and how I interact with people. I can't begin to emphasize enough that you have a group of people that know you at this level, the same level that the fifth step creates. I don't know about you guys, but the first man I did a fifth step with was the first human I had ever been completely honest with about everything in my life. I had some stuff on my fifth step that no man wants to talk about. You know, those of you that have hung out in crack houses and trap hotels for a long enough period of time know what goes on in those places. And I would spend a lot of time in those places. And so I engaged in a lot of things that when I think back on them, they make me cringe sometimes. But they were part of my experience, and I'm not ashamed of them. But what happened in that first fifth step is they're about 3/4 of the way through this 1-inch binder. And I would go to his house every Sunday. I think it was for maybe ballpark 6 Sundays in a row. And my sponsor was a very, I guess, enlightened person because he wouldn't listen to a fifth step for more than 3 hours because he didn't want to expose himself to the poison that I had for more than 3 hours at a time. And so I was allowed to come to his house for 3 hours. He made me read every single resentment. And every Sunday leading up to when we got to that point, I'd ask myself, am I going to be willing to tell this man this stuff? And I'll never forget when I shared all that stuff with him, he just looked at me with this half grin and said, I've done all of that. I have that experience, and I have that experience, and he told me a little bit of his experience. And so what he taught me in that moment was to swap fifth steps. So when I listen to a fifth step, I'm also going to share parts of my fifth step so I can, one, build confidence and trust with the people that I'm working steps with, and two, you know what the fifth steps have shown me over the years? That we all, on some level, come from the same place. Yeah. We all come from the same place. So, that's my take on the fifth step, and I'm going to turn it back over to Brandon for 6 and 7.
So, Mills touched on it last night. When I'm listening to a fifth step, I take a piece of paper and I draw a column down the right hand side, and over to the right side of it, I'm taking down all the names of the people that I identify that they owe an amend to, and then on the left side of the page, I'm writing all of these themes and defects and things that show up consistently in their what they're telling me, right? And so I just happen to have a bunch of some of these are in Tarek's handwriting. Some of them are in other people's. Here are some of my defects, okay? Demanding nature, need to control, the idea that others' behaviors define me. My validation comes from others' behaviors, the idea that I always do my best. I know what's best for others. Do I want what I have? Money equals value equals happiness. Laziness, respecting authority. And I got an 8-step list here. That's stepson, stepson, mother of my children, wife, boss, HOA. last one is Tarek, but it's in his handwriting. People's behaviors are reflective on me. Oh, wait, this is a different inventory, and it's there again. I demand respect. My path is the best. Money equals security. I want to be someone in AA. I deserve whatever. I don't trust the process. I can't control. Got a coworker. We got stepson, mother of my children as my list. People must act the way I want, or I don't think it's appropriate. Sponsees held to a higher standard than me. not sensitive to how others affect. So these are the kind of things that show up again and again. I could read a bunch out of this stack, but it's pretty consistent, right? What I see out of that is that when we go to page 76, the sixth step takes up one paragraph. And I think it's perfect the way it's written. I don't even think we need what they write in the 12 and 12, but that's great that it's in there. So it asks some questions leading into this paragraph. If we can answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step six. We have emphasized willingness being indispensable. And then there's a question that has two questions in it. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all these things which we have admitted are objectionable? Mills did a wonderful job last night of explaining these defects that he looked at. You know, when we finished the inventory, he wasn't ready to have God remove them. But when I left him the sheet and said, why don't you just marinate in those for about 15 or 20 minutes and I'll come back? And he was forced to look at this piece of paper and realize he didn't want to be that guy anymore. So I have to want, or I have to see that these things are objectionable. After I find them objectionable, then I'll take them to God. Then I'll want them to be removed. Okay? Sixth step doesn't need to be any more complicated than that. I sometimes have people sit on the sixth step for a week or 2 weeks until some sort of experience happens. I would love to tell you about the first sixth step experience I had, but I don't really want to spend a bunch of time on that right now. And then we've got this seventh step prayer, which is really the third step prayer with a bunch of teeth in it, right? God, my creator, I am now that I've looked at all this stuff since the third step, I'm really ready that you have all of me. I've seen the good, I've seen the bad, and I don't want it anymore. I pray that you remove from me those things which stand in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. Notice that I don't get to decide what they are. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. Conclusion of the prayer that started at the third step. I'm an agent. I get to represent God on a regular basis in my life. Do I make the company proud? Or do I do a shitty job? When we put it in those terms, it seems a lot more tangible. It seems a lot more real. I hope that on a regular basis, I'm doing a good job for my employer. Some days I fall short. How you doing?
Question. Someone told me one time, it was my sponsor, in fact, that said that our defects of character are our thoughts and our shortcomings are our actions. Is that an accurate statement?
I don't know. Some people look at it that way. The way that I look at it is that my assets, the greatest assets that I possess, show up as my defects quite often. My greatest defects show up as my assets too. So I'll give you a very physical example. In eighth grade, I started having to shave every day. Okay? Fought that for years, right? About 5 years ago, I gave up and grew a beard. And I think it's a pretty kick-ass beard, right? Okay? For years, fought that shit. Then I embraced it, okay? I have this ability physically that when I start hitting the gym, I gain mass incredibly fast. When I stop going to the gym and I continue the actions the way that I am, I get kind of chubby quick. It's the same thing. My defects show up that way everywhere, guys. One of my defects that shows up consistently is that I like to be the center of attention. It is incredibly annoying in a lot of cases. Right now, God has me in front of you. It seems to be working right now. I'm comfortable doing this. Mm. There are a lot of cases. There's a lot of people in this room that could not sit up here because they don't like to be the center of attention. They'd rather be in the behind the scenes. We need them too. But this same thing that makes me annoying to some makes me powerful in other cases. Is it a defect? I don't know. But God's determining whether or not that's useful to other people. It's my awareness of those defects that gives me power. It's my awareness to know that I'm going to speak the truth to most people, whether it hurts their feelings or not. It makes me incredibly powerful in giving you some perspective that you don't want to hear. It pisses a lot of people off. Is it a strength? Is it a weakness? Is it a defect? Is it an asset? I don't know. My awareness around that gives me freedom. It also allows me to keep it in check so that I don't use it to actually harm people. So all of what we do in steps 4 through 7 and then take into 8 and 9 increases my awareness of my impact on the world so that I don't have to do more amends, so that I can have something that I watch in the 10th step, so that I know how I show up in relationships. If I have, I don't know about you guys, but for my life, I didn't know what I was watching for in the 10th step. What am I watching for? Well, I'm watching for all these things. Make sure that you don't talk for too long so that it annoys people. Give them a chance to talk from time to time. You know, these are the things that I have to be aware of as they show up. The difference between defects and shortcomings, I heard somebody ask Bill one time, what's the difference? And he said they're the same thing. I just didn't want to end two steps with the same word. I don't know what the answer is, but that sounds logical too.
So the miracle of steps 6 and 7 is experienced in the actions of steps 8 and 9. Because of my current struggles with some of my shortcomings and my defects of character, I tend to agree with Brandon 100%. We have these blameworthy traits that become praiseworthy traits. And the description Brandon gave is perfect. There's also a grace and a mercy, and I believe almost somewhat of a sacredness to the character defects or our shortcomings. And here's the linchpin is that, are you driven back into your relationship with God when you're crushed by the self-imposed crisis that your defects of character are creating in your life? I think there's mercy and grace when you're driven back into the relationship with God. When you know, some of the most sincere prayer life I've experienced has been in the form of almost, I would say, a begging. Like I'm begging God to show himself in my heart so I can engage these relationships on a new level, because I'm being crushed by the way I am engaging in the relationships, and I don't want to be that way anymore, but I don't have the power to be any different. I don't have access to the power, and so I'm going to God. I don't get up, and I'm not resentful at God for all the things that have transpired in my life. There are experiences that have been lived, that have moved through my existence, and they have been given to me so I can have a perspective on them. And sometimes there's a lot of shortcoming and defects in what I'm looking at. Some people don't weather the storm. They're out the door. I don't know if it's a gift. I don't know what it is, but it drives me further into this relationship that I continue to nurture and attempt to cultivate. The other beautiful thing about the amends process. So I got clean and sober. I had... ultimately, my first 8-step list ended up with 230 people in institutions. And if you don't believe me, it's in my car, in my trunk. And I have made an approach on every single one of those people and institutions on that list. It took me 8.5 years to do that. I've paid back close to $16,000 or $17,000 in that time. And I still got more money to pay back. I actually paid back drug dealers, believe it or not. I had a guy who gave me 1,000 hits of ecstasy, and he was a friend of mine. I am still paying him back, and I'm almost done. I disappeared on him. This man invited me into his home, and he broke bread with me.
Eric, why would you say, use the word, go before God begging? I honestly would go boldly before him, with my head held high, asking him, requesting of him to help me. Why?
Because I'm watching people die left and right, and for whatever reason, this power keeps me here. That's why. My ticket can get punched tonight when I walk out that door.
True.
And for whatever reason, this power keeps me here. I have mad respect for this power. I do.
So there's this idea that I hear in rooms that I'm going to go home and like smash my defects and remove the defects. And some of those defects do get removed, and I only know of one way that they do. Is that when I go and knock on enough doors and have to sit down from another person to make amends for being an asshole, at some time through that process, it's the weirdest thing, you know, 5-6 people in making amends for being an asshole, all of a sudden it occurs to me, wow, I'm really an asshole. And that process crushes me to the point where I start to change my actions towards other people. So the defects aren't removed by me. The defects, the awareness of them relieves them a little bit through the action of amends. And so there's nothing I can do to create that. I mean, I can be willing to go through the action, but at some point in time, it like softens and it eases up and the awareness increases. And that is where the defect kind of, in some cases, goes away. Mm. But the 6 and 7 are so important to me when you apply it to 10 and 11 and 12 and having this awareness around it that we'll get into tomorrow. But it's like these two steps seem to be glossed over in the room. The 12 and 12 has a whole essay dedicated to both of them. The essay on the seventh step talks about humility, which is probably in some way a part of the seventh step, but I don't view it that way. To me, it's more the awareness of the defect. And I guess they just needed to write something, so they wrote about humility. That's the way that I look at it. I mean, it's great writing. I love reading it, but it's like, to me, it doesn't apply. Because I can't create humility. My desire to create humility is not humble in of itself. God, I want to be humble. Make me humble. God, make me humble. Does that sound humble, or does that sound like a demand I'm placing on God to do for me? No, that's me wanting something. How do you know if a person's humble or not? They don't care. That's how you know they're humble. It's not about them anymore.
The simplest way I can put it is until the last flicker of value is snuffed out with whatever action is categorized as a defect of character, it's going to persist in our lives. And the thing that I have found effective in the amends process is if you sit in front of enough people and you see pain in their eyes as they're sharing with you what your shortcomings and or your defects do to them, it begins to put pressure on that part of your character, and maybe something goes into remission. But I am not a guy that believes character defects are removed anymore. It's just like alcoholism and addiction. It's put into remission, and it can come out of remission at any time. So with the amends process, guys, you got to remember this. There's three imperative questions to ask. And an amends is not an apology. An apology is a polite gesture that sometimes implies that you just want to slide this under the rug and move on. And then you have an amends, which is to compensate others for the harm caused with a sincere desire to correct behavior of the past and for the future, to make right wrongs.
To amend.
To amend, to make right. So the word sorry does not show up in the vocabulary when you're making an amends. There are direct amends unless the person you're making an amends to specifically instructs you to do it on the phone.
There are also ways to approach people on Facebook. It's not making the amends. It's you reach out to someone you haven't seen in 15 years. You say, hey, I've been going back through my life. I've been trying to repair all the damage I caused. After reflecting, it's quite clear to me that I've caused you some harm. Would you be willing to sit down with me so I can repair this damage? Boom. That's why I got on Facebook in 2008, was to find people and make amends. I never made the amends through Facebook, but I had a lot of people said, no, man, we're good. No need to talk to us. Some people never responded. I've got a couple websites, Spokia and ZavaSearch. $4.95, you can get an email address, a phone number, and a physical address. In this day and age, you can find anybody you truly want to find. And here's another deal. I've yet to meet a relapse that doesn't have unfinished amends behind it. They're always there. And the amends process, I didn't know this when I was going through it, but now reflecting back on it, I've made so many amends that by the grace of God, I had the opportunity to repair all these things. I'm just now realizing how that cultivated human connection in my life because of the what was talked about in some of these amends was amazing. And it just deepened my attachment to this process. Amends after amends after amends. I learned how to trust God because my sponsor could not go to me with me on the amends. Think about it. Your sponsor holds your hand through the entire process. And then he lets go, or she lets go, and then you're left with just you and your personal relationship with your Creator, and you got all these amends you got to make. That's how you go from faith to trust. Why do we not talk about amends in the meeting?
Because nobody makes them.
Nobody makes them. I get the ones with your family are extremely difficult and they're very painful, but the reality of it is, for the most part, your family's not going to spit in your face and tell you to kick it. They're just not. But that person you haven't seen in 15 years and you stole their baseball card collection, that one creates a lot of fear for some reason. You go make the amends. There's not a street in this world that I can walk down and I'm going to run into someone walking down the same side of the street as me that's going to force me to jump across to the other side. That's freedom. I've made a lot of amends for people I've harmed in recovery, believe it or not. I've done a lot of goofy, insane stuff in recovery that I've had to clean up. As my late grand sponsor used to say, how free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? Make all those amends, because Brandon said that word all, A-L-L, means all. So I'm going to share two amends stories because we don't have time for me to share all the ones I want to share. But long story short, I slept with my best friend's fiance. And I devastated an entire group of friends because people were forced to take sides. And when I got clean and sober, I had to go make amends throughout that entire circle of friends. And of course, it took some time before he was willing to see me. And I met him. And the questions, by the way, you tell them how you harmed them, and then you ask them, did I leave anything out? Is there some way did I harm you and I can't remember? Next question, do you need to tell me how any of this makes you feel? In my opinion, that's the most important question, because now you've given them a green light to unload on you. Do you need to tell me how any of this makes you feel? And then the third question is, what do I need to do to make things right between you and I? And so I did this with him, and there was a lot of yelling and a lot of crying, and it was one of the most powerful amends that I had. But this is not even the best part. And I went and made amends to her, but after a while of making amends, we started going to panic shows together again, and at one point he gave me a gift for my birthday, and it was this stone, like gem, that was wrapped as a pendant. And in 2010, I had to go out to the Monastery of the Holy Spirit, and the facilitator, he sent everyone attending an email. He said, please bring an artifact that has special meaning. And the first night of the retreat, that's how we started. Everyone that was in attendance at the retreat that brought their artifact had to go to the front of the room and tell the group why this artifact was what we put up on the table. And the fact that I brought an artifact given to me by the man whose fiance I slept with proved the power of God in my life. That was the power of this program. How does that happen? And so as I'm making amends to the group of friends that was devastated, I went and I had this couple that I had to make amends to. The fiance and I, she would house sit their apartment, and we would have sex at their apartment, and we were disrespectful of the space they were giving her, not to mention that I had forced them to pick sides. That was just part of it. So as I was talking to him, it came out in the conversation that I had been using the apartment. Well, 5 years went by, and this couple had found a used condom in their bedroom. And for 5 years, they didn't know where this condom came from. And for 5 years, each of them was suspicious of the other one cheating.
Damn.
What if I had not become willing to make that amends? Wow. I don't even think I was there to make amends for what I thought I was there to make amends for. I made amends, and they got closure on that. They got free. I don't know the ripple effects of my actions. That's what that amends showed me. So I can sit up here all night and talk about making amends. I'm sure Brandon has a story or two he'd like to tell.
You mended a marriage without even realizing it. Yeah.
So my segue into marriage. So I ran a marriage into the ground. Did a lot of things in the relationship that she's not aware of. A lot of things that she was aware of. Bankruptcy. Foreclosure. Wrecked the lives of you know, I had to... There, you end a marriage through the way that I ended it, and, like, it you've got her whole family, your whole family. Like, there's a mess, right? And... it took me a little while to actually get to the point where I was willing to make that amend. The reality is, I believe, you can argue with me if you want, I believe the only reason why people don't make amends is because they attach themselves to the fact that they think that they're still right and justified for doing the shitty shit that they did to the other person, right? And... if, as long as you want to hang on to that and think you were justified for your action, you're not going to make that amend. And so it took me some time to get to the point where I was actually willing to make that amend. I'm sad it took me as long as it did. I was about a year and a half into sobriety, made that amend to her. And to that point, we could not communicate via text message or phone or in presence without her just letting me know how she felt about me. Okay? Lots of great information for Six Step, but She really expressed consistently to me that she was displeased with me. Made that amends, which I had to make because I was planning on asking the woman that I'm currently married to ask her if she would marry me. And I felt that I couldn't get into another relationship without cleaning up the past one. So made that amend. And then the slow process of healing the relationship with the mother of my children started. Okay. I tell this one for two reasons. Number one is my daughter, who is now 10, be 11 in a couple weeks. She was 3 when our relationship dissolved. And my daughter sees me how I am now, and she sees me interacting with people, and she sees how things are, and I guess she thinks I'm a pretty good person. So she went to her mom one night to challenge her, you know, why the hell did you get rid of this guy? He seems like he's pretty cool to me, right? And she explains to my daughter, the man that your dad is today is not the man that I was married to. And he in no way resembles that guy anymore, okay? Now, if I hadn't been willing to make that amends, she probably wouldn't be willing to have that conversation with my daughter. But the mother of my children and I speak on a regular basis now. And it's conversation. It's like, how's your day? What's going on? You know, we have an interaction. Here's how I know that this shit works. About 6 months ago, she started asking me questions about the program and where meetings are and what things are. And I knew what was going on. It wasn't for her. I knew there was somebody else in her life that was struggling with some stuff. And it finally came to a head. And the reason why I'm emotional is because this is the power of God, guys. The person that she called to 12-step, this other person in her life, was me. I went to the hospital to 12-step call this person in her life. If I don't make that amend, that's not possible. If I don't get on the spiritual path and legitimately do this stuff, she ain't calling me. God's real, guys. And the power is so freaking amazing. And it's right there. Closer to you than your breath. But the problem that we have is we're so busy up here in what we think and what's going on that we can't access it. Do a fourth step. Do a fifth step with multiple people. The more people you do it with, the more the liar retreats and the truth comes out. Rework the first 9 steps on a regular basis. You gain access to the coolest stuff on the planet. The greatest dope that you've ever touched in your life can't touch this stuff. Hopefully we're communicating this to you, that this is what goes on with us. After I go through that process and then I go out into the world and I see, as a result of these amends, the access that I gain to this power that exists in everything, this process is completely circular and folds in and of itself, and you see the energy throughout it all. The steps, they all work together. We lose so many people at 9 because they're so wrapped up in their head and what they think that the world's supposed to look like, that they're not willing to go out there and communicate the fact that, look, I fucked up. Does anybody in here actually think that they've lived a perfect life to this point? Does anybody actually think that anybody else has either? The power that comes in and just going to people and saying, look, I've wrecked some shit and I want to get clean. I want to repair this relationship and then see where it goes. There are so many other stories I can tell you, but I'm really excited to listen to Mr. Bill Brown.
So, guys, we're going to take a 10-minute break, and then we got Billy B.
Yeah.
Tomorrow. Woo! Hey, guys, we start at 1 o'clock tomorrow. Yeah, Kelsey's our speaker at 1 o'clock tomorrow.
I'm making a...